We are going to be hearing from these poets, Joan, Navyuk, mess it up. Kane is Inupiaq with family from King Island and marries Igloo, Alaska. She's the author of Cormorant Hunter's Wife and Milk Black Carbon. In addition to serving as the 2021 Mary Root Chair of Creative Writing and Journalism at Scripps College, she teaches poetry and creative nonfiction in the Department of English at Harvard University, is a lecturer in the Department of Studies in Race, Colonialism, and Diaspora at Tufts University, and is faculty in the Graduate Creative Writing Program at the Institute of American Indian Arts. Jennifer Militello is the author of The Pact, called Emotionally Resonant by Publishers Weekly and Stunningly Original by Green Mountains Review, and the memoir Knock Wood, winner of the Zunk Nonfiction Prize, as well as four previous collections of poetry. Her work has appeared in Best American Poetry, American Poetry Review, The Nation, The New Republic, The Paris Review, and Poetry. She teaches in the MFA program at New England College. And lastly, Anna VQ Ross. Previous poetry collections are If a Storm and the chapbooks Figuring and Hawk Weather. Her awards include the Robert Dana Enig Prize for Poetry, the New Women's Voices Prize in Poetry, and fellowships from the Fulbright Foundation, the Massachusetts Cultural Council, Sewanee Writers Conference, the Virginia Center for the Creative Arts, and the Vermont Studio Center. Her work appears in Harvard Review, The Nation, The Paris Review, The Southern Review, and other journals. Anna is poetry editor for Salamander and teaches at Emerson College. She lives with her family in Dorchester, where she runs a performance series, Unearth Song and Poetry, and raises chickens. And now I'm going to turn it over to these poets to talk about things that we need to talk about right now, women's rights, reproductive issues, and the body. Thank you very much.
I think Joan's mic might have come off.
That's all right. When do you want to start?
Okay.
But there we go.
Did you get it?
I think so. Okay, I fixed it. Great. No, I didn't fix it. There's so many, thanks for having us. There's so many baffling things with this microphone. And we got instructed on what to do with our hair, so mine is pushing the mic all over the place. Anyway, I'm really glad to be here. I'm going to read some poems about my cervix. And I'm also going to, while my bio is outdated, at least it didn't mention my ex-husband. So anyway, here's some poems. Rookeries. All men knew a secret of the northern part of an old world, a less perfect idea. For the bicornuate woman, it was an island. Though its birds lose our trust, we might learn their language. After all, we have been taught to read and write, to remove our hands from other work as we watch water twist into rock, to cover our wounds, staying alive light after light. For something, I worry. The moon pronounced with clarity its known topography. Our letters and lists reconstructed grammars. They replaced the ways in which we were grabbed and pushed, then shoved. Set a wife and her children to rove with indefinite orders. Lineal migration on a small scale is not nautical, but conflictual. Of those men, we knew I could never do them any good. In this way, I forget and let the wind river. It gales and tears at my shoulders and wrists. This is a poem called Dark Traffic, and it doesn't have my cervix in it, as far as I know. Anyway, Dark Traffic. In the snow's buffer, the sound of a voice set forth. I thought her lost already, that she had gone to neglect the late migration. Before it ceases, the ice collapses easily. There is no day without a symptom. Consolation may turn out to be a guttural practice, after all. The small gesture of sound lodged deep before it glides without warning downward. There is nothing but the wind, a howl and dive where water is thrown over water and sewn into it. a howl and dive of wind, water, she found flown over water where once we found ice, where the snow once stuttered the sound of that shouter, shouting for this listener, holding her head in her hands, the head in its fine blank way, an original. Okay, this is a cervix one. I think we had discussed before this event to like a little, just a little bit of a rant on what it's been like to be a single mother during the pandemic. And I will, So I wrote all of these poems while home with my children, home being an apartment. And my kids really haven't seen their their dad a lot in the past several years. Anyway, this is a poem that is for him. Nangakia, he beat her. Blood into the crowberry-stained ground, her cervix bruised by his various parts, auguring daughter into mother, wordlessly, mouth agape, for years on end. And now he wends his way atop new summits until she knocks him into hell. She cannot say, she will not see the migrating snow geese bright in the blue sky again. Flock call struck into her skull. Will the ravines thaw when really they should be fixed in ice? He delegates women to rip follicles from her scalp, and she remembers of a story of a season when the sea gave no sustenance. You remember with her, even as you forget her wounds. Okay, I've never read that before. I'm never going to read it again now that I've done it here. Fuck that guy. I could turn my mic up. I could also move it closer to my mouth. There we go. Oh, God. All right. At least I got the cervix one out of the way before this mic. All right. This is a poem called Gray Eraser. There is no one to scold, even when the heavens deem the most abject of failures receptive to correction. Likewise, in cackleless sleep, the magpies remain tucked away. A mother can no longer dismiss her child as a spectacular waste of an education. Even the wind stills its sighs in the dry and bare branches of the nearby white spruce damaged by lirula blight. Meanwhile, a pearl-green fox retracts its untrussed tail through an eastward sky thick with unfamiliar stars. If I wake missing the cold, fresh sound of new snow, I may still miss the kinds of places that scar me and complete my sorrow. Late at night, the birches must let their leaves pitch and imbricate the floor of what is left of the woods near what is left of me. This is a cheerful poem called Dark Passage, and I'm going to move my, there we go, mic a little bit. Okay. Dark Passage. The fatherless child is taught to swim by his abandoned mother. Mouths on the mainland erase them as she casts him down into the fishlessness of the black lake pooled from ice melt on ice on the isle on which they lived together, distant from those who banished them. His small palms grasp a sealskin scraper once wood. The water buoys his body. Between rainfall and unnamed waves, he shall rehearse the flooded world she forgets and loses, then fails to remember when they help two hunters come to pass upon their land, alive with a drift meat of the rare carcass, men sent to kill. The boy has grown to swim at sea, yet it occurs to me not to demonstrate a story I am not to tell, for spit in the ocean, there is no end but wind. I'm going to skip some of these. This is a poem called Sometimes There Are Even Scars. And waking night after night in an apartment parched, I looked out the window into the dark for some glimpse of what I've lost, an ocean that held so many boats built by men now dead, numerous windings through scree to crown, driveline, cairn, blind. I see nothing but the sky. Sometimes stars as bright as collarbones gleam before I blink, then find these firmaments also disappeared. Other nights, something Atlantic heaves with rain. When the storm lifts away, perhaps it will have left gaffed fish, surplus for a child and another child to find. Perhaps I will no longer fight the mind that might hold but one swan, one hair, one figure. Perhaps I will not begin to cry because of the ways in which I mark the months as they accumulate and fall away. No blood, no certainty. I might yet reek of burnt things. My skirts may carry their stains as I pass trap after a deadfall trap, the burn, the coffle of dog hitched to dogs, hitched to a lading of oil. That was just a love note for you that I dropped. I really, you can, Anna can read it now or later, whatever. This is a poem that I am going to skip. And then this is another poem that I'm going to read. It is called Iningoak, or Playhouse. This mic is like making me have a panic attack, like live.
Like, is there something I can do for you? Do you want me to pull it closer?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just like, I just want to go die right now. Whatever. I'm almost done. Oh, that's such a diva move. All right.
Diva.
Right. Okay. Iningoak, Playhouse. Even so, we may grow at last invisible. I try to let darkness fill the house and fail at this too, of course. Through fulgence and birch, a civil twilight's the most I can muster. Though yes, it could be said that I do mean to write a few things down. Instead, expressed milk in each bloom, thumb number for black ash. Into tragedy, he oversimplifies so much. Each meal of borage, nasturtium, lettuce bitter beyond its bolt. The redolent and thick fistfuls, these things to tend and mind, inter, rememorate. Neither does he inflict violence, nor did she, one spring, walk 3 miles south of the seawall on sea ice, which did not break until it was set to give, could go, and was gone. This is my penultimate poem. It is called War Poem. If you will get through these hard times, there will be others to harrow harder asper. The rude heart must continue to blurt and bluster and batter. We've never known the latterly sweetness he's been after. I saw, I say, an alley in a guise, though I grasp a forest as it sires its own dark. I gyred into scissure by a lilted pulse abreast an alpine rill whose brink begets snow to freshet from buried born land. Pip manachduat to twist with row. Pia, pia, vai, boys, amen system, quit us, see us go. And then this is my last poem. Am I there? That's better, huh? All right, Jesus. Okay, this is my last poem, and then my cheekbones and my hair are gonna chill out. This is not about my cervix, but it's about my uterus. So, there we go. I don't have one anymore, as you'll soon hear. Nunatak. In a strait, some things are useful. Others, true, she turns to ash. Thrust thus, her head thick with arrogance, infection, and futility. It could be how a young wife went, strewn with net-veined willow and mountain avon, trespass and wreckage. She could write about the year she turned to heat and haze, to lays, emumurat, imarach dunga, of cannula and silver nitrate, of petiolus and achene, about to begin again, of greens as they green, of a man aged, eschered, of a confined gleam, to hereby dissolve and hold for naught the soil, gravel, silt, groaning as the tools of our penultimate glacier. A glacier I might pronounce like grief. One does wish for words to thaw in the mouth, but find instead a tongue welt, erosional or depositional, raised and visible, rift into language and grit. Il ranemik, I'm so looking forward to hearing about your cervix and your cervix also.
Thank you.
Hello. There we go. Thank you so much for being here today with us, both to celebrate the book here at this amazing festival, and also to hopefully share in our rage. I know that when I posted about this event on Instagram, I said, please come and join me in my rage today. So it is a real honor to read with these other poets today. And again, thank you for being here. So just a few quick words before I start. In my view, motherhood has long been a tool for oppression. We live in a culture that expects women, and I say women inclusively, to celebrate motherhood with a kind of selfless joy in order to allow other members of our community to thrive. So I think when we talk about the fact that our culture expects women to be mothers in order to feel fulfilled, and when we experience a pandemic during which women basically disappeared as they served as caretakers for others for a year. And they talk about the fact that there were no like scientific articles by women. I know all of my friends who were mothers stopped writing. So this, you know, we're coming off an incredibly difficult time, and then to have this slap in the face happen is just not okay. Forced motherhood in this context is not okay. So I'm going to read a few poems, and then what I'll do is read one poem and then read a short piece from a lyric essay that is very poetic, and then read a last poem. So this is Anthem. There goes woman, mind of a worm, that oyster blister fit of the willies, that prisoner of war. There goes woman, mouth of February, stern as a vase, lemmings at the cliff, stillness like a stain, sunlight through the blinds, reed lips to sing. There goes woman, sieve. In her eyes, disaster, drought, fever, aircraft carrier hull, pupils dilate, calm like hunters hunted themselves across a field, in exile, standing at the well, at the center of the palm, a coin about to be dropped. Make a wish, dare to crouch at the wink of light as it flips away, down into the lag of darkness, down into the animal throat. In her rot, we bloom. In her word, we scold. She needs us of lime and sand and salt. There goes woman, poison-lidded, string-like, thick, annihilated, knobbed. She rates herself on a scale of 1 to 10. Plated, her inability pours. Ruin is her ranch land of gods. Branching out, drying up, her rote quadrant, her quail crossing the road, her old sense of something at stake. Woman is a maze from which no one gets out, sometimes found dead in a pig trap, sometimes living in a frying pan like a frog. Feathers like black plum whiskey, she follows the sharp line between shade and sun, a space the size of a farmer's porch, a hook inches from the void, motor oil smeared along her body, brimming with garbage, apprentice to a lantern that lets her work at night, apprentice to cash in a Bible on a shelf. Her memory is tangled, is a tangled market full of ripped clothes and starved vendors, a hospital, a warehouse of discarded weaponry. With her wool foul and muzzle and exposed by cuspids, with her insistence on temperatures and punch of the clock, with no darling and cannot look, leprous as a wither, suffering underwater. None of us take on the role of daughter, tannin thick in a bottle, brown lake. Back when whispers were rationed like mercury dripped and hardened in a tooth. Back when horses' footing loosened and slipped. Back when questions were carried by the scruff of the neck. Her days are full. Her days are hands rifling through an airport bag like the hands of a magician pulling a rabbit from a hat. Here comes woman, a grab of dander taken from the wind. None of us were heavenly, stalled in that ravine. So this next piece is just a short section of the problems of the mothers. The mothers didn't starve purposefully. The sons and daughters ate like hatchlings from their mouths. The children ate the bread baked and left each mother without a crumb. They ate the hens that died in the blizzard before she could boil them free of feathers. They fed at her inability to walk across the yard. They drank rainwater from the cistern and sipped her salted weepings, sipped her sugary blood. They grew and grew, but still demanded to be suckled to sleep so that she had to lie contorted beside them. They cried until she gritted her teeth. They clung to her until her hair fell out in clumps that resembled the petals of dogwoods past their season. Their cries carried through the ventilation and escaped into the rooms through ancient wrought iron gates. The mother's hands grew more civilian each day, their hands bittered to weeds in an overgrown garden, their hands reflected wounds which were fatal, wounds they couldn't feel, hours were unwelcome as guests. Voices reined in their heads while they fought them and then let them ricochet as if their interiors were empty. The acoustics were healthier that way. The mothers gathered at the banks of a river and dipped themselves in the hopes of rendering their skins like iron, since the battle would be a battle for years. Instead, they found themselves weeping at their unkempt reflections and at a sense of communion with the moving waters. They felt free of the little hands and mouths that haunted and crippled and pursued them. They felt moved by the natural sounds. The river spoke of baptisms when there had been hope and an imagined infant that had little to do with the real. Before the loss of sleep, before the loss of all they could call themselves, before the hunger that had the gnaw, not of a single rodent, but of all the rodents numberless as rain, their memories were like endless telephones ringing. They worshipped and got clean before they fell where they stood. They walked a few steps along rutted roads that resembled their desiccated veins. Their spines bent, their abdomens trembled. Before they were dead, they all had been ghosts. This was where the flesh came in. It had an end like a rope. When the children could not pass stool, the doctors told the mothers the pain was within normal range. When the children could not keep the room still, the doctors told them, children, turn and turn. When the children could not smooth their chests, the doctors told the mothers bones grow and the ribs break through and the shapes of things lose their symmetry and caliber. When the stomach spasmed, go home. When the breath was labored, go home. Go home, sleep. When the fevers came, go home. When the vomiting emptied the small stomachs and the crying emptied small lungs, go home, go home. They cannot eat, they cannot sleep, they cannot drink, they cannot see. Go home, go home, go home. The mothers developed ulcers in the palms of their hands and chapped sores at the roof of their mouths, their hair filthy, their thoughts flatlined like the pulses of the dead. What others said did not impress them. What others said could not reach their ears. The mothers could not feel joy. They could watch their children like stones. They could watch through the layers of watching and could not be sure what they saw. A smile into a small hand, a secret curl, a dark eyelash down over the pale and perfect cheek. A sigh, at least they could give a sigh. Mommy, the children said, a sigh in return. I'm going to stop there and I'll just read one last poem. And I just want to say one of the things that resonates most deeply with me when it's said about motherhood is, I love my children, but I hate being a mother. So all of this, mother that. I have two amazing, beautiful children who I love dearly. Okay, this is a poem called Mansplaining. Dear sir, your air of authority leaves me lost, eases me from a place of ease, contracts with my contradictions to take from me a place, autopilots my autobiography, whitens my white, sighs with my breath, bodies with my face. Your certainty has me curtained, your nerve has me nervous, your childhood has me childlike, and your nastiness nests in my belfry like a hawk. You are beyond and above my slice of sky, peach as a pie, bourbon as its pit. You are spit and vinegar while I sour in my bowl. You bowl me over while I tread lightly on my feet. You walk on water while I sink. You witness me, fisherman boat on the lake, while I struggle and burble and brittle and drop. You wink at me, and I must relate. I close my eyes to erase you, and you are written in my lids, a litmus test, a form of light. God, with 3 days of facial growth and an old bouquet for a face. Soap and water for a brain. I have no handsome answer. I have no pillar of salt or shoulder to look over. I have no feather to weigh. I have no bubble to burst. I am less to myself, a character in a drama, a drumbeat, a benevolence, a blight. All parts of me say shoot on sight. Aim for an artery or organ. Good night. Thank you.
I hope this is working. Is it? Yes? Okay. Hi. Thank you all for coming. Thank you all for staying. My name's Anna VQ Ross, and I just will add to Jennifer's remarks by saying that I think Adrienne Rich called motherhood a revolutionizing experience, and I think we're all feeling that now. Also, I think that what this pandemic has taught us is who our friends are, and I count these two women sitting next to me as dear friends who of many years, and I've also been learning from their poems for many years, so I'm really thrilled to be here reading with them from my new book, which is called Flutter Kick. Along with Jones and Jennifer's, they're available at the table outside. And this is actually the first time I've held this book in the world, so I'm really excited to be here reading it, reading from it for you. Although I'm actually going to read from the manuscript because I don't want to mess it up because I borrowed it from the table. Could I actually hand it to you? I'm just worried I'll crease it. This is a book of a lot of motherhood and daughterhood poems, and it's, I think I said, called Flutter Kick. I'm going to start with the very first poem in the book. And it's called House. I come from there with lavender growing small against the bricks. I come from there with a little white jug and a tea towel on the tray. I come from there with a worn stair rug and a wooden banister, leading up two floors past bedroom doors to a room at the very top, with a window looking down to a square of grass and a garden wall, where roses grow with tangled canes rooting between the cracks. I come from where I once was told someone attached a lock to her bedroom door and didn't say why or who she feared might open it through all the years she stayed in the house with lavender grown small against the bricks and the roses rooting through the wall and the tea towel on the tray and the little white jug and worn stair rug she descended the day she went away. I come from there. Joan suggested that, which should be the first poem of the manuscript. So, this is called Almost a Mothering. Consider reduction. The five turkey vultures making sleek dark circles above the field this morning. They hunt by smell, I read, but hunt isn't right. Instead, they gather from the air some wind-translated sign of carcass. No punishment, nothing inflicted. The angle of their plunge, a means to rewind body to material, almost a mothering. Each afternoon when the freight train pushes its high whine through the culvert near the field, I remember I was named for the woman in that famous Russian novel who tossed herself from the station platform as the engine pulled in. No revising that action. She was a mother too. At 12, I read it and thought her a fool. Now I see how a life buckles. A horse whose head has been yanked too often takes command how it can. The vultures land in the lichened branches of a nearby tree to claim the offal of this neighborhood. Red-crowned, they preen with their hooked beaks, accepting every stain. That Russian novel is... Anna Karenina, I'm sorry if that was a spoiler alert about the ending. I'm going to move forward a little bit in time. This is a seasonal poem for this weekend. It's called All Hallows. All Hallows. The year that she was three, my daughter was a fox for Halloween. Orange felt hood with ears, a tail stitched on her back, and painted on whiskers. She, the only girl in the preschool parade not dressed as a princess. That was the same year something kept finding its way through the back wall of Granny's garden to dig up moles. Mornings we'd find the excavated holes, entrances we hadn't known existed. A fox, said Mr. Lovely, who came to cut the grass. We'd need to put down poison. But would that remove the fox or just the moles, we asked, and wouldn't it be better to find the hole's gap and fill it? My daughter cried for the fox she never saw, begged us not to kill it, but still she didn't want to go alone into the garden. I think now she was trying out fear that Halloween. Not the fox circling the henhouse kind, but the unseen thing that leaves a gash, exposing mud and plunder beneath the grass you thought you knew. In the picture we took, I hold her and her baby brother on my lap. He stares at her strange ears and painted face, amazed. She bares her teeth and locks the camera in her gaze. And here is another poem, this one about my son. If you have children, you know that if you read one poem about one child, you have to read a poem about the other kid. Somebody might find out if you don't. This is called Explaining Tampons to My Son. Mama, what are those? He asks, pointing to the small cardboard box that appears monthly on the toilet tank. So I tell him, inside, uterus, a baby could grow, doesn't. Serious-eyed, he listens. Don't worry, it doesn't hurt, I lie. No baby, he says. Yes, baby, I say, no baby. We've been reading Greek myths, the gods swallowing their children or hiding them away in caves, Zeus ravishing women into cows and islands and ash. Did it hurt? Hera fuming, the other Olympians gorgeous on their thrones, trying to get one over on each other on earth. No blood but ichor and ambrosia to smooth their battle nicks. I think of washing my sheets this morning, generations of smiling TV women in my head, calmly conquering grass stains, grease, mud, blood, the dried in and caked on. Back on the couch, he leans close, squeezing himself against me. Keep reading. We've reached Troy. A whole city and so many favored heroes demolished over a goddess snit fit and a greedy boy before the Romans take over with their temples not as beautiful but more luxurious. What's luxurious? He asks. Expensive, I tell him. Something everyone wants. But not beautiful? He asks. Maybe not. This is confusing. Also comfortable, I say. It's the end of the story now. All the gods renamed, then given up to constellations almost obscured by light pollution and bedtime schedules. Mama, have you finished shedding your blood? He asks after brushing his teeth. Mostly, I say. He nods, burrowing down into the luxury of his bed. So... Danielle asked me to help put this panel together, partly in response to the recent political developments in our country, which have been, of course, brewing for decades now and years, centuries, right? And so this is a poem that makes use of some found text from... Justice Kavanaugh's confirmation hearing when Christine Blasey Ford bravely stood up and told us what had happened to her. It's called Fugue. Can you tell us what you don't forget? The senator's voice repeats from the radio. It's rush hour, Boston, I-93, driving home from dance class with my daughter in the back seat. Her 12-year-old legs stretched long in pink body wrappers brand spandex as she wonders aloud what we're going to eat for dinner. Air brakes wheeze, then release beside us as a bus muscles past. And should I change the station as the senator's voice again repeats, can you tell us what you don't forget? Above the traffic, rush hour, Boston, I-93, my daughter in the back seat. Girl whose body I once unwrapped from mine, is she listening now as the woman speaks? I was pushed onto the bed. His weight was heavy. I shake my head. Boston, rush hour, I-93, as if I could swerve by what edges up in me. He put his hand over my mouth. It was hard for me to breathe. Boston, rush hour, I-93, but I'm cruising a suburban street of dandelion lawns, my legs the same age as my daughter, who jams her knees against my seat when I hit the brakes as one last car squeezes in ahead of me. Can you tell us, Boston, rush hour, I-93 is fixed to a grid of red, what you don't forget? Taillights that bleed, their after images. Can you, against gray sky, I'm tired, forget picturing my bed back home. What you don't, quilt pulled tight against the sheets. Can you, don't, forget? Or is it that other bed? What you, and what year was it? Forget, don't, what day? Don't, can you forget how? Tell us, don't tell what, did he? What, can you forget? Don't tell us, touch me? I was wearing a one-piece bathing suit. I believed he was going to rape me. Boston, rush hour, I-93, a tail light flickers, horns begin to beep. How many times will I repeat this drive? Mom, when are we going to move? Her voice reaches toward me and I ease my weight up off the brake, considering the question. The miles, like bodies, fall between us and what I don't forget. In Boston, rush hour, I-93, driving home from dance class with my daughter in the back seat. Thank you. I'm just going to read a couple more because I think our session is running over. thank you. This is a love poem about abortion. And it's called After All. Even when the garlic crop is good, something else is always dying. The peas withering in the afternoon, we hoped for rain instead of watering. The tomatoes overshaded. It should teach us something about pathos or fate, but really, couldn't we have tried harder, predicted the week of heat when the spinach bolted? The trouble with water, with gardening is there's rain and wind and sun to blame. Like the woman in the buffer zone outside the clinic who spat at me and screamed, "What kind of man is he to bring you here?" While I held your hand and our daughter curled in her crib at home with the sitter. Afterwards, I dozed against you on a parked bench overlooking the city until I was ready to go back to work. But that's not gardening. And still, there's the garlic, those round, paper-skinned heads you pulled this morning and carefully laid out to dry on the driveway's warm, flat bed below our window. I'll just note that, like me, the majority of women who seek abortion care in this country are already mothers, and they know what they're in for. This is the last poem I'll read. My son hands me the family letter about this unit, page torn from his fourth grade math book. I'm supposed to read it, considering how geometry and classifying shapes, some words are highlighted so I get the gist, might fit into dinner table chats or fights about whose turn it is to take a bath first tonight. I misread convert as covert and lose minutes wondering what a covert measurement could be and why. But no one wants to know that they're being measured or tested, do they? Even though we are every day, all our angry faces, likes and hearts totted up, politicians and yogurts we prefer, a pointillist scrim tracing wherever we've been. But maybe I should say I, not we. I don't like being tested. My husband, for instance, doesn't seem to mind. Almost high school dropout with a perfect score on his SAT. But all those choices freeze me. The family letter tells me I should encourage your child to explain. True or false? I am a good mother if I am always awake and dressed before my children. True or false? I am a bad mother. If I give up blank and start blanking 3 to 5 times a week, I am a good mother, wife, other. Please identify my lines of symmetry. But in high school, I liked geometry, maybe because my teacher drove a sky blue Corvette and wore vintage polyester skirt suits, and maybe because the tests felt like stories of how one shape could become another, divided but still itself. I liked that I could see it happening point by point, the way every night after my husband and the kids are asleep, I go around the house, clicking off each light until I become invisible, even to myself. Thank you, everyone. And thank you to Danielle for conceiving of this panel and inviting us. I think that's it. Yes? We can de-mic.
be signing books. Yes, we'll be signing books. Table out there. We'd love to say hello and be angry with you.